To show you.
Yeah. There was a screening of Irreversible, pretty recently, at the Arrow in Santa Monica.
And yeah, that's like, the one I went to. Yeah.
Oh, really? At the Arrow?
Gaspar Noé was there.
He was there at Q&A. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about going, and I was kind of booked that day anyways, but I was like, man, I kind of want to go just to, like, get the vibe out of the crowd. Like,
I don't know, there's weird, yeah, happening right there.
There were a lot of first timers. It was weird because I saw the original. Like, I rewatched the original at the Frida, and then like a week later, I saw the straight cut at the Arrow. And weird vibes all around.
Yeah, so. No, I bet. I remember seeing that movie, and I was like, I don't know, 17. I think I was still like in high school. My buddy let me borrow it, and I'm just like, hell yeah, Monica Bellucci. And then I come back on Monday, like, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, same. Recommended in college. I was like, oh, cool, yeah, I'll use my Friday to what the shit? All right, well. Cool. New genre, yeah. I guess I'm part of now.
Well, speaking of movies that make you feel weird.
Yes.
Irreversible to Midsummer. There you go. All right.
That's a hell of
happy
a
birthday, Webster. That was a good.
Let's go ahead and get started, shall we?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. On that note.
Can't reverse that transition right there, so let's do
no,
it.
No, let's
wow.
do it.
That was good.
That was good.
That was good.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Mm-hmm.
And Phil Acevedo.
Hi. Happy birthday.
Aw, thank you. This episode comes out on my actual birthday, like the day itself, so I'm very excited. So joining us this week, we have special guest from Tale of Two Sisters podcast and the Carnal Extremities podcast, Vanna.
Hello, hello.
Welcome hey. Back. So
you get the John bit, Cena huh? music.
I'm honored.
So I am very excited. We are continuing with my birthday mandate with a movie that is near and dear to my heart. I cannot wait to talk about it. I know Vanna, our guest, loves it as well. I've been waiting years
to talk about this one.
And I am so excited to jump right into it. We are talking about Midsummer. Or Midsommar, depending on who you are and how pretentious you may or may not want to be. and from 2019.
Very good. Feels like yesterday.
Oh, dude, don't even get me Jesus. Started.
We'll talk about our personal experiences, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah,
me and Webster got a very particular double screening of this.
Yeah, we had a very fun experience and quasi-traumatic.
I think we all have a unique experience when we first saw this. I can't wait to share mine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it'll come. It'll
can't
come.
Wait to jump in. So kicking us off, Vanna is going to kick us off with the IMDb synopsis and some box office information.
All right. So the plot of Midsummer is that a couple travels to Northern Europe to visit a rural hometown's fabled Swedish Midsummer Festival. What begins as an idyllic retreat quickly devolves into an increasingly violent and bizarre competition at the hands of a pagan cult. That's pretty good for an IMDb synopsis right there.
Yeah, what the hell? Did they redo all of them recently? Because the past month has been pretty good.
They started listening to the podcast and heard us roast them.
And they're like, tell the AI to write this.
This is like a 9 out of 10 for...
Yeah, this is a good one. Synopsis.
I would say a solid 8.5.
Yeah,
pretty detailed,
All right, way to go.
All right, yeah, and Midsommar is written and directed by Ari Aster, and it is starring Florence Pugh, Jack Rayner, William Jackson Harper, Wilhelm Blomgren, Elora Torsha. Sorry, I'm gonna butcher these names.
It's a rite of passage, truly.
Archie Madekwe and Will Poulter, which, you know.
Eyebrows.
Love him. Eyebrows.
He's got the most punchable fucking face of any actor working
dude,
right now.
Will bro, Poulter, it's sure. it's literally Sid from Toy Story.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He said that someone's literally, like, asked him that.
I think he has straight up dressed up as him for a Halloween costume. There's a photo of him wearing a shirt, and he's got, like, a Woody doll.
Oh,
like,
that's
I've
great.
Seen this. Good. This is like, yeah, this is like he actually dressed up for him at his Halloween for Halloween one time.
Way to play into the bit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if he didn't, it'd be a missed opportunity there.
For sure. So.
All right, but this movie had a budget of $9 million, and it first released on June 18th in 2019 at the Alamo Drafthouse, and then later July 3rd in 2019. As a wide release, and it grossed about $48 million.
Can you guys?
I actually went to the Alamo for the first time a couple weeks ago. So.
Oh, cool. I still haven't gone yet.
Wait, what? We haven't taken you there?
No, you haven't.
You took me, Gwen, remember?
Oh, God damn it.
Was it for Skidamarink?
Yeah, you guys went to go see Skidamarink, yeah.
Yeah, that was my first time at the Alamo. Very
okay,
cool place.
Frankenstein's Alamo Day, Webster. We're doing it.
I've already been to Frankenstein's.
Yeah,
oh,
she's been
we did. We finally take you there.
You did finally take me to Frankenstein's. It's
Mystic Museum and Alamo.
There we go.
All right.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. That's what we're doing.
There we go.
That's a good day.
God. All the spooky LA stuff, we're slowly chipping away at the list just because.
That I've been going to so frequently, too. Like, yeah, Webster loves this shit.
Oh, wait.
How was your experience, though, Vanna? How was your Alamo experience?
It was so fun. So I went to the early screening of The Boogeyman, and there was a Q&A. Rob Savage, David Dasmalchian, and the producers were there. We got, like, free moonlights, keychains, posters. They, like, signed our posters and everything. It was really fun. And then a couple days ago, I also went and saw the screening of The Howling, because my podcast co-host is friends with a programmer at Alamo, and he just came out with a book, like a comic book about werewolves. So his book tour is going to every Alamo in the country and screening a werewolf movie. So
that's
that was
super
fun.
Cool. Very cool. Very cool.
Oh, Phil, you did that too, didn't you?
Yeah, you went to The Boogeyman, right?
I went to the Boogeyman screening, but at the Arrow in Santa Monica. And same cast and crew were there, also giving out merch. There was a cool photo booth. And, yeah, the movie was cool. I enjoyed the movie. It was fun.
Yeah, I think it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I actually think it was pretty good. For what
I had
it
a good
is,
time.
Yeah.
I had a good time.
It's
I looked
a
around,
PG-13
like,
horror movie.
Yeah, of course. I mean, not to put down other PG-13 movies, horror films out there, but this was fun. This was fun. I liked it.
No, I love PG-13 horror movies. I think there should be a resurgence of PG-13 horror movies. There's a certain level of just, like, campiness that comes to when you're restricted by rating.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
I really enjoy, like, but we're not talking about
creature design. No, yeah.
This one was not cool. A PG-13
no!
movie, by all means.
Absolutely not.
No, I also just wanted to throw this out. Can you guys believe that this movie only had a $500,000 larger budget than Repo the Genetic Opera?
What?
Yeah, because it was an $8.5 million budget for Repo.
No.
This looks like $1 million more expensive.
No way. I find that very, very hard to believe. Did Repo spend all of their budget on Paris Hilton?
It could be.
No. That comic art was expensive.
Oh, man.
Anyway, let's dive into some freaky folklore, because as you guys know, I love me some folklore and I love me some folk horror. So.
Yeah.
Let's dive right in. Anyone who's talked to a wellness expert has heard of pseudoscience, but what about pseudo-history? While some theories throughout our understanding of the past have been thoroughly discredited, it doesn't make them any less influential. A major example of this is something well known as the witch cult hypothesis, which theorizes that the witch trials of the modern era, you know the ones, were an attempt to suppress the pre-Christian pagan religions that managed to survive the Christianization of Europe, which started all the way back in the Roman Empire.
Somebody has a dog back there, by the way.
It's a neighbor. I hear it too. It's
okay.
Yeah. I'm not bad, guys.
Just double checking.
Oh, God. Is it loud?
Yeah, I can hear it. Do we want to see if the dog will chill or is the dog not going to chill?
I don't know. It's my neighbor's. Well, it's my parents' neighbor's dog. It's surprisingly loud.
Do you
it's
have a little like tree you can throw over there?
It sounds like a chihuahua. It sounds like a little fucker chihuahua. I don't know. I didn't know there was dogs in this neighborhood.
Yeah, okay. this dog is very interested in prehistory there.
That's absolutely. Yeah. As we all should be.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yup, witch cult theory hypothesis.
So, this often involves political favoritism, rewriting of history, and targeted societal changes. And as far as history is concerned, these methods started peacefully, until, of course, they weren't. Thus,
that's not fun.
No, of course, it's not fun. Thus, a fair amount of traditions from a number of non-Christian religions were lost to time, and the surviving practices often invoked fear in the general populace rather than any sort of alliance.
Yeah, I didn't go too deep into it, but I was reading a lot about like how basically when Christianity took over, it was like, no, we're bros. Like, you guys keep all your power and you have your own little practices. That's fine. And then once leadership started, like, changing after a couple centuries, it's like, oh, we're going to kill the fuck out of you. And and yeah, all those books, those are on fire now. Sorry, bros. Yeah, that's fun stuff.
Because, you know, when the books start getting burned, we're going in the right direction.
Exactly. That never not works.
Mm-hmm.
And we've actually already talked about the result of this, the Salem Witch Trials, in our episode on The Witch, all the way back in, again, 2019. Holy shit.
Wow. Yeah, I also have a witch tattoo.
Oh, God. Nice.
So
great
good.
Year. 2019 was a great year.
Yeah.
It was a goddamn good year, yeah. The last good year, some say, you know?
No. But what we didn't talk about back then was how the general narrative against pagan religions throughout modern history created a number of rebellious writers and scholars who embraced the witch cult hypothesis and used it to create a very specific type of fiction, folk horror.
Mm-hmm.
So good. So, paganism, sacrifice, and superstition were all interwoven into a folk country setting for great literary works that thrived in the early 20th century, including Grant Allen's Palinghurst Barrow from 1892, John Buchan's Witchwood from 1927, and Eleanor Scott's Randall's Round from 1929. Ooh, I love history.
Yeah, has anybody read those? I haven't read any of those, but they're very thorough, like, you know, internet
like synopsis. Yeah, I think they were mentioned in the really awesome but very long folk horror documentary on Shudder.
Yeah, that's the one on Shudder. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
It's
yeah.
so good. It's long, but it's good.
That documentary is actually referenced in a lot of the research that I found. But I still didn't watch it because I didn't have time for it.
Yeah, it's so good. However, by the time the 60s rolled around, historians started learning a lot more about the specific... However, by the time the 60s rolled around, historians started learning a lot more about the modern witch trials and came to the conclusion that it was a less coordinated effort to eradicate a specific religious practice from modern society and more humans being dumb, panicky, dangerous animals. And you know it.
Yeah. Don't attribute to malice what you can to stupidity.
Just
wow.
Yeah. They're like, they're trying to eradicate the paganism. Like, no, they're just really, really, like, scared and dumb. That's it. That's all it was.
Yeah, because humans are panicky animals. But still, the influence of this particular set of fiction made its way to cinema in the form of the unholy trinity of folk horror films, which included Blood on Satan's Claw, Witchfinder General, and The Wicker Man.
Mm-hmm.
These films proved all you need is an isolated group of people, a countryside setting, and some good old ritualistic supernatural mayhem to invoke fear a stocking slasher never could. Oh, God. Have you guys, I mean, other than The Wicker Man, have you seen Blood on Satan's Claw or Witchfinder General?
I have not.
They're
just The Wicker Man.
Brutal. Witchfinder
General. Yeah, I've seen Blood on Satan's Claw, yeah.
Blood on Satan's Claw is pretty general, or pretty brutal, and then Witchfinder General is also pretty, like, gruesome.
Ooh, worth an episode or two later on.
I'm down.
Huh? Heck yeah. Okay. Folk horror, man.
All right, I know we've all seen The Wicker Man, but have you guys seen the Nick Cage Wicker Man?
So, actually, I've never seen The Wicker Man.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, definitely check out The Wicker Man. But the Nick Cage has got this iconic scene that I won't spoil it.
I'm familiar exactly with the I know exactly what the iconic scene is.
Yeah.
We all know.
We've all been on the internet.
His entire life was memefied, so.
I've spent more than 2 days on the internet. I'm
cool.
But feature remake versus OG for sure now.
Ooh, yeah.
That would just be us screaming bees for an hour and a half. And you know what? You know where we're going with this, but where did writer and director Ari Aster pull from specifically to provide his own take on folk horror?
Well, we'll find out right now. Yay! All right. So, just like in the movie, the Swedish take on Midsommar was the main basis, obviously, for this particular film. Although, it's a very highly fictionalized and stylized version of that tradition. Now, some additional horror elements were taken from non-Christian rituals that were actually historically found in both Germany and England, which, you know, if you've looked at their history, can be pretty fucking metal sometimes. So, yeah. Swedish Midsummer is a family event, actually, that has many people raising, what is this, a maypole? I forget, I don't know what it is. Yeah, maypole, right? And a lot of them just dance around it, so that's kind of like the inaugural thing. But greenery is often placed around homes to provide the residents with good luck throughout the rest of the year. And it is said that if a girl picks 7 different flowers in silence on a midsummer night and puts them under her pillow, she will dream of her future husband. So, interesting ritual
it's
stuff.
It's also, like, fertility and, like in terms of, like, pagan rituals, it's all very interesting, because you know what the maypole is supposed to represent? A giant dick.
Oh, there you go.
Hell
okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Europe, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
The traditional Midsummer Day is actually a Saturday between June 20th and June 26th, and is considered an unofficial public holiday in the region. Also, skinny dipping is very normal during this time period. Pretty non-Christian stuff all around, although, like many of these long-standing religious practices, apparently the new generation is less about the religious aspect and more enjoying, like, the day off and the skinny dipping. That's from what I've heard. In my research, it's like, yeah, the youths don't really care about it that much, though. So I'm like, yeah, fucking all right, whatever.
If I had a national holiday dedicated to picking flowers and skinny dipping, yeah, I wouldn't give a fuck about what it meant.
Right? It's like, you'll dream of your future husband. Like, I'll dream of some shit going on with somebody. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so. Like, I'd be like, bold of you to assume I want a husband.
That's a great point. All right, so Aster also explored popular spiritual movements like Anthroposophy. That was hard to say. Which has its roots in German idealism, mystical philosophies, and pseudoscience that might be as, you know, racist as hell, actually. Because it was made in the 20s and eugenics was all the fucking rage.
Ooh.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Boo indeed. But also, you know.
Good stance. Good stance.
Yeah.
Horrible People's Podcast. Anti-eugenics.
Right. Yeah.
Boo we'll cut indeed. Ourselves real,
cut ourselves real hard on that edge right there. So. Theosophy is another inspiration founded by a Russian named Helena Blavatsky.
Oh, correct. Helena Blavatsky.
All right, who really wanted to emphasize that her beliefs were not a religion until people totally ended up turning it into a religion anyways. Though this one was far less racist, didn't have a stringent set of practices, and included a lot of aspects of Hinduism. But for New Yorkers in the early 20th century, so hipsterism has actually been around a very long time too, just so you guys know.
Yeah, Helena Blavatsky is like, she created like the form of spiritualism that did eventually become the Nazi Party.
Oh, okay, cool. Oh. So they another situation where they're like, we can use a lot of those ideas, but we're going to do our own thing.
Like, you know how the Nazis like had this or how Hitler had this weird obsession with like spiritualism and like
yes.
That was all Helena Blavatsky. Like it was like a kind of not perverted form of it, but it was an evolved version of Helena Blavatsky's work.
Yeah, cuz when I was reading about it, it was it seemed more inclusive, at least in, you know, as much as you can be for the 20th century.
Yeah, but she came up with the whole Aryan type thing. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, and then we can all be the Master Race. It was like, no, just one. Just one, actually.
So, last podcast on the left did a really good series on Helena Blavatsky, if you guys want to check it out.
They did. Very good.
Yeah.
Damn, I gotta check that one out, actually. Hell yeah. All right. So, but when you mix niche fanatical religious movements, centuries-long European non-Christian traditions, a genre created from a whole last discredited academic field, and a breakup story, you get yourself a mindfuck of a Stu and Ari Aster sophomore film. So, you know, it's been since 2019, but let's check up on him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh. Let's check up on this movie that is no simple slasher. I had a tie-in somehow, man.
Nice,
eh? I don't know. So, last time we checked with Ari Aster, he was riding high off the success of Hereditary, Chef's Kiss, by the way, the highest-grossing A24 film of all time.
Damn.
At the time. I think A24 just...
did they just beat
Everything
it?
Everywhere All at Once. I think Everything
Oh,
Everywhere
it did. You're right.
That.
You're right. Yep, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. The studio itself was... It's all right. The studio itself was also becoming much more of a household name. Yes, in spite of the biggest film featuring a scene where Toni Collette flosses her own fucking head off.
Beautiful.
Real Generati stuff right there.
Yeah, no, seriously, man. I think all of us remain pissed off that she never got even, like, some kind of recognition for her performance in Hereditary by the fucking
Academy. Oh, yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah, but
agreed.
Whatever, dude. Yeah, but whatever. Around the time Hereditary was seeing wild success, executives approached Aster about creating a Wicker Man-like slasher set in Sweden. I don't know why I said it that way, but Sweden. for which Aster turned their asses down before reconsidering on the condition her turn. Okay, I am Ron Burgundy.
Phil gets all the typos.
I always get the typos.
There was the typo in mine, but I was able to catch it and know what you were trying to say.
Because you're a goddamn pro.
I am not. So for which Aster turned their asses down before reconsidering on the condition that he turned it into his own little breakup movie / existential horror hybrid.
So good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. However, with the Hereditary money still flowing, the big dogs agreed and collaborated with Swedish studio Square Peg, hoping lightning would strike twice. Spoiler, it fucking did.
Yeah, duh.
Duh.
The film was mostly shot in Hungary, as there were limited filming hours in Sweden, and Hungary was far, far cheaper.
Doesn't a lot of filming happen in Hungary because of how cheap it is?
Yeah, I think Don't Breathe was another one.
Yeah, reason, Don't Breathe. It was cheaper to film in Hungary than it was to film in fucking Detroit.
Yeah, they're like, what's your shittiest looking neighborhood? Like, still Hungary. Nicer than Detroit, but close enough. Still close enough.
Yep. We have to make it look like RoboCop. All right, so filming scenes took a long time as Ari Aster was very meticulous with his camera movement and placement, and it was fucking hot.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, hot as in temperature-wise, not him and Ari Aster's, like, camera movement, even though that was hot, too.
I thought it was the camera movement was, like, you know, spicy.
Yeah. The camera, there was a lot of very beautiful tracking shots, a lot of freaking, you know, I'm not going to get into that.
We totally can. This is one of the movies where I was just like, I am acknowledging the camera work here because it is stunning.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thanks, Vanna.
As Chris Tucker in The Fifth Element goes, hot, 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 hot! But that's a terrible impression.
I was drinking water, Phil, but I got it.
Let's continue.
Yeah.
Hundreds of extras were involved throughout the film, and around 3 different languages spoken between them. They were all repeatedly swarmed by wasps. Since a lot of scenes involved food being spread out throughout the set, that's fucking interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wasps, not bees.
No, wasps.
Bees?
Bees?
Oh, wow.
Bees. Yeah, apparently it was like hundreds and hundreds of them just randomly throughout the shoot, and they was like, all right, wasps are coming. Cool, cool.
Listen, damn. I love bees. I have a bee tattoo. Like, I fucks with bees. Wasps can die. Yeah. Wasps are terrifying.
Yeah, they can burn in hell, dude.
I agree.
Anyway, so according to Jack Rayner, quote, you just had to be okay with wasps being all over you every day.
What? This man?
Is anyone okay with that?
Okay, this is a man who we saw his whole dick in this movie. Yep. And yep. He was cool with that? Like, just wasps being all over him while he was butt-ass naked?
As long as it wasn't wasp day when he was doing that scene.
Well, I know why there was so much blood all over his junk. Because they got stung to shit.
They're like, use it, just shoot, run real quick.
You're terrified, remember, you're having a bad trip and you're
can
terrified.
Someone get the set doctor?
Look at him go, wow. Yeah. He's really into it.
So, for the psychedelic shots throughout the film, some scenes had as many as 60 different versions in an effort to perfect the hallucinogenic visuals. Very cool.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, I personally have not done mushrooms, and I'm not going to say in sick, you know, I'm not going to ask
Webster.
Either of you.
Oh, Webster,
if any
you
of
are
you
missing
have.
Out. I'm joking.
But,
hey, don't incriminate us on air. But,
I know,
but if, we might have some insight.
I was going to say, the people who in my life who I know who have done mushrooms and have seen these scenes have said it is the most accurate representation.
Yeah.
I will add to those people. Yeah, no, I've been saying it since I first saw this movie. The part where she lifts her head and the camera tilts up and you see the tree kind of like motion. That's, I had the same exact, I've only had a couple experiences and trips and stuff like that. But yeah, definitely. When I was outside, the trees were definitely moving very much like that.
See, my twin told me it was the hand with grass. Like, when her, you can see the grass growing through her hand.
Yeah, that's what my boyfriend said, too.
That, too?
Yeah, he was just like, that's exactly what it's like. And I was just like, cool, good
yeah,
to know.
When we watch it at home, we typically have to, like, take an intermission because my boyfriend will start to panic because it's, like, triggering. He's like, we gotta take a break because I gotta monitor my heart rate for a couple seconds here.
That's the part real. That's not fun. That's always fun.
There's a few scenes like that in this movie for me, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so by the time Midsommar went to the MPAA, they took 6 weeks debating whether it would be rated R or NC-17, but the team managed to cut it just enough to narrowly snag that R rating. The original cut was 171 minutes, but it would eventually be released as the director's cut.
The director's cut? That's my bad.
I'm going to skip that. I'm going to skip that fucking typo right there.
Now, you are a pro, Phil.
Did
you
guys watch the director's cut or...
Oh, man. Oh, I wanted to, but I couldn't find it.
Hey, did you guys know that the Ben Affleck classic Daredevil has a director's cut?
Oh, sir,
I hate both of you.
I'm gonna throw it in there. I'm gonna throw it in there, man.
So,
did you watch the director's cut or not?
I did not.
Wait, which Blade Runner is the director's cut, dude? The one with the unicorn or no unicorn?
God damn it! Right. So,
I'm gonna stop.
No, okay. The director's cut. Truly, I have not seen it, but I've heard great things, and that I need to watch it.
I've not seen it either. I've been wanting to see it. I think it's only available in physical media, isn't it?
On the Blu-ray?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought it was on Amazon for a little while, but yeah, I think only if you have the Blu-ray.
Midsommar.
Well, it first launched as an Apple TV exclusive, but I think they removed it.
Was an Apple TV exclusive?
The director's cut was.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No mas, though. No more.
No mas.
That's lame.
You can buy Midsommar Director's Cut, a collector's edition, for $45 on the shop A24films.com website.
Wait, it's still $45?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I should get that now.
Not bad.
Oh, it, looks, it launched at $45.
It's fucking beautiful. There is a foreword on the...
If you hear clicking, I'm right now.
It comes with a little booklet with a foreword by Martin Scorsese.
What?
Nice. That's very cool.
See,
Scorsese and Ari Aster are homies for sure.
When Midsommar first came out, they had this little promo. It was like a bear. The bear in the cage that you could buy, a little trinket. And I wanted it so bad. I just didn't buy it.
Oh man.
I know.
Well,
2019. We all have regrets.
Different time, right?
We all have regrets.
Oof. All right, Van, are you ready?
All right, yeah, let's get into it. So, Midsommar was a big hit and one of the most polarizing films of 2019, I can confirm. It had a cinema score of a C+, which indicates a huge divide in the general public, and most other scores settle around the 50% mark, with Rotten Tomatoes' audience score set at 63%. Critics, however, fucking loved it, and so do I.
I'm so surprised that this this rated so poorly with audiences.
I regularly go to back on for this one.
I'm not surprised.
I mean, I'm disappointed, but I'm not surprised. You know,
There you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, critics gave Midsommar rave reviews upon release, with Rotten Tomatoes critical consensus reading ambitious, impressively crafted, and above all, unsettling. Midsommar further proves writer-director Ari Aster is a horror auteur to be reckoned with, which, yes, definitely unsettling right there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. At the very least.
Salon.com represents its biggest praise, saying, Midsommar isn't just a great horror movie, it is also one of the best movies ever made about living with mental illness.
Oh, wow. That's big praise. Also, wow. I would say accurate.
Yeah, I would say accurate, too.
Completely agree, but the San Diego represents one of the less than stellar takes, saying, don't let the studio manufactured hype fool you. This is a Midsommar's matinee bore.
Wow.
Someone pissed in their Cheerios.
Yeah.
Hey, Webster, aren't you from San Diego, dude?
Yeah, yes. What's up with your people, dude?
Yeah. Tell your people to watch more movies.
There's a reason I left.
Tell them to watch more movies.
I'm going to pull up the review from the OC Register just so that we can see what Alex's new people feel about
it. Yeah, I was going to say, I doubt the OC Register has a better take on this. OC just flipped blue like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, that's true.
But regardless, it ended up making $48 million on an $8 million budget, which would seem pretty successful to us, you know, regular people, but Hollywood generally considered those numbers kind of mid for a summer flick.
Oh my god. Who was that? Was that you, Flynn?
That was a good one, buddy.
No, Vanna.
That was a jab on the shoulder right there, kind of delivering.
Vanna, I know we just met, and it's great to have you on the podcast. I'm still kind of new, you know, in the gang myself, but one thing, you know, that I highly encourage you is to don't give Flynn credit when you see a pun like that. Call him out and do what I do.
Mid for a summer.
Don't give it to him.
Don't give him
so
credit.
Hot there, the echo came back. It was great.
Oh shit. You see what you do to me, man? You see?
You're killing your father.
First it's the echo, next is the blood pressure, next is the aneurysm, dude.
You're killing your father.
It's getting heated.
You're killing your father.
But this was still enough for Ari Aster to have complete creative freedom on his next film. Surely that one's less divisive, right?
Have you seen Bo is Afraid?
I
haven't yet.
Very unfortunately have not been able to set aside 3 hours.
Yeah.
Honestly, I tried, but in the 1 week that it was out, because it flopped, I was like booked that week. And I was like, dude, seriously, you guys dropped this movie? I think it was in theaters probably for like 2 weeks, maybe in LA.
Yeah, I was trying to finish my thesis at that exact moment. So I was like, I can't go do that right now.
Did anybody here see Beau's Afraid?
I don't think
no.
so.
No, I have not, but I've heard nothing but mixed reception from everyone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very mixed. Yeah.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. All right. So we can't speak to it whether or not but we can't speak to its divisiveness because it's true. Yeah. Every single, like, it's like a 50-50 chance. Anyone that I've spoken to that has seen it, it's either like, it is the best movie I've ever seen, or I didn't get it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
And none of us saw it, so clearly that reflects in its box office, right?
Yeah. It was out for a week. I was busy.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, yeah. But for Midsommar, let's look at where some of film's biggest supporters reside, which is, of course, Letterboxd. So on the platform, Midsommar has a 3.9 rating out of 221,000 reviews. And let's read, like, four of them. That is a lot of reviews, because, wow.
Yeah, that's so many reviews. Sheesh. I would say Midsommar is one of those, like, Letterboxd, like, girlies that, like, everyone mm-hmm. loves to review on Letterboxd because it's one of those, like, what's the funniest review I can write for Midsommar on Letterboxd?
Oh, yeah. You get a bunch of those right now.
It makes perfect sense to see those numbers.
Oh, yeah. For example, Andrea with 5 stars says, I'm so glad Ari Aster clearly never went to therapy.
Oh, man.
From what I've heard, that's even more clear in a... And Beau is Afraid, so.
Well, also, like, his beginnings, like, his short films that he did, like, that man has never stepped foot in a therapist's office.
Have you
seen
his short films?
Yes, I know.
Dude, they are so good, but they are brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Where can I find these? I want to watch
YouTube.
Them.
YouTube, dude. Oh, they're free.
Okay, all right.
They're rough.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, it's all right.
Rough as they're well made, but they are a rough experience.
Like, though. Emotionally That's... rough.
Yeah.
I'm mm-hmm. down. I'm fucking down.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty.
I'm going to be like, Savannah, we're watching... My Savannah. I'll be like, next time we kick, I was like, Savannah, we're going to watch some rough Ari Aster short films. And we have no idea where this is going to take us, but forgive me ahead of time.
Yeah, have fun date night. Let me know how that goes, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Alright, not sure how to say this username. Harris C. Arches also gives it 5 stars. I hope so.
Yeah, I don't know.
But they give it 5 stars saying, always great to see a feel-good movie about traveling, recognizing your worth, and wearing fun new accessories as you leave a toxic relationship. Smiley face. Getting rid of a shitty boyfriend can be a real bear.
Oh, you Hersey Arches.
Oh, you.
Yeah.
Number one Gizmo fan is less enthused with 1.5 stars saying, I respect the Midsommar Stan community, but it ain't me. By the way, number one Gizmo fan, or a second account named number one Gizmo fan, who knows, actually wrote a second review. This one is 3.5 stars saying, imagine being left out of your family's suicide. LMAO.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus.
That's rough.
Oh, man.
That's a dark one. That's a dark one. We are talking about an Ari Aster film.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
It's going to be dark.
I mean, that's part of the whole thing. She did get left out of her family's murder-suicide, so...
Yeah.
They never include me in anything.
Home Alone would be a very different movie if...
Oh, wow.
Oh, there you go. See, that's what I like.
Wow.
All right, yeah. Let's top it up with Patrick Willem gives it 4 stars, calling Midsommar the best version of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory since 1971.
No!
Oh, that is funny. Oh. That is hilarious.
Oh, she paid for her golden ticket by guilting her shitty boyfriend, so you know?
Mm-hmm.
I would love to rewatch it specifically with that
in mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And try to make everything fit.
I'm kind of rewatching the movie in my head right now, and I'm just like, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, huh?
No, I'm seeing it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling it. Yeah.
Yeah, all we're missing
onto something there.
Yeah, all we're missing is her saying, I got a golden ticket.
Yeah.
Veruca Salt is, oh my God, Will Poulter.
Will Poulter, yes.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Fucking eyebrows, yeah, absolutely.
Not a lot of pubes in the Charlie candy, though.
Thank God. Mm-hmm. Oh, that we know of. That we know of.
Very yeah, true, what true. What was in that chocolate river? I don't know.
A couple had to go straight when somebody falls into it, you know?
All right, so we learned a little bit about Midsummer, religious movements, discredited academia, and wasps in Hungary. But how about we discuss Ari Aster's second film? And also happy birthday to June Queen Alex Webster, Gemini Queen.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Love birthday month.
Love
and
birthday.
Now who wants to celebrate and put Phil in a bear suit?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go.
Burn him.
Let's do it.
Flynn, I hate you so much for writing that line.
and making the guest recite it. Thank you, man.
I know.
Of
course. No, but I am also down to put Phil in a fucking bear suit, dude. Like total douche.
There's still time. Halloween's coming up. So, well, not for a long time, actually.
Phil le douche.
Phil le douche. Oh, so, man. With that, everybody, what are your thoughts on Midsummer? Vanna, you're the guest, so you get to pop off. With your reception of this particular film, viewing experience, well, do it all.
In case I haven't made it clear, I very much love this film. I have a Midsummer tattoo. I regularly go to bat with people for this one. I have a very like deep connection. A lot of weirdly similar parallels in my life. To the plot of this film, so that's why I will always defend it. It was also one of my boyfriend and I's first dates, so that was a great litmus test.
That's a really great litmus test. Holy shit!
Litmus test, yeah.
Yeah, we had a blast actually. Other than you know the anxiety induced by the realistic drug trips, but yeah, I absolutely love it. I actually made my family watch it with me one time, because I'm that person.
I was going to say, you've brought this up before, I think, on the podcast, but you have this thing about forcing your family to watch disturbing films. I think you've
okay.
Also...
Okay. I don't force anyone to do anything. However, I often give options, and they somehow always pick... The worst one, like, we did watch Midsummer together, we did watch Hereditary all together, as well as, like, Prevenge, we all watched Martyrs together.
Ooh.
That's a Train to Busan, right, Eden Lake, Ganjam, Haunted Asylum. Ooh. We watched some fun stuff together. It's it's a great time over at our house. The Lodge, we watched that as a family.
You watched The Lodge as a... Ooh.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great, fun time over here at the Taylor household.
I think that is... that's incredible.
But, I guess long story short, I love Midsummer. I could talk about it forever. It hits in the feelies, and... I see lots of arguments about this movie that are just fruitless. So, yeah. I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit more, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. I agree. Very fruitless arguments. Yes. What do you think, Phil? Huh?
Where do I even begin? I love this movie a lot, man. Like... This is the complete opposite of the last episodes for Repo. This is a complete 180 for me, man. This is to me, this is Ari Aster's home run. I fucking loved Hereditary. I remember seeing that in theaters, and I was like, who is this guy, and when's his next movie? And when it came to Midsummer, like, I fucking loved it, man. Like, 2019 was a stacked year for film. There were so many great fucking bangers after banger, but this one was one that just kind of stayed with me in my fucking brain months and months and months after its release. It just stayed with me a lot. I can't praise the hell out of this movie either. I also have a similar first date experience with this movie. Me and Savannah didn't go see it in theaters, but I was wearing a Midsummer t-shirt. And it was like our first date, and you know, we're still kind of getting to know each other a little bit. And she's like, I didn't see that movie. And I'm like, oh, you have to watch it now. Oh my God, you have to go see it. Let's go see it right now. Let's go. And then, yeah, I'm pretty sure she's seen it by now. I don't know. We've been together like 2 years or so. I don't know. But anyways, like, yeah, no, I fucking loved it. I saw this with my dad by accident. Oh. my dad had no idea what to expect. They have like a packed Fire Stick, you know, but with what, like, where they have all these movies, 1080p, really good quality, right? Blu-ray quality, whatever. And I was like, all right, no one's home. I'm just gonna throw in a movie. I threw in Midsommar and took off my shoes, started watching the movie. Within 5 minutes, my dad gets to the house. And he's like, he takes off his shoes. He joins me in the living room. He's like, what are you watching? He's like, oh, it's this movie. Oh, shit. I don't know. I don't know if I should watch this with my dad. And then my dad is like, you know, hardcore Mexican dude, you know, from El Barrio. And, you know, he's like, and throughout the movie, he's like, I can just hear him whispering, just going, what the fuck? and he's just like, hey, what the? And he looks over and he's like, what the fuck is this? This is a crazy movie. And I was like, and I was like, yeah. But he was so into it. He was really, really, like, he watched all of it. He stayed through, he usually falls asleep within the first 20 minutes of the movie. Dude was awake the whole time, throughout the entire time, all the way to the end. That's saying something right there. Yeah, no, I fucking love the shit out of this movie. I can't praise it enough. You know, I haven't been in any debates with anybody who does not like this movie, but man, if I'm up there too, man, if somebody wants to talk shit on this one, that's one where I'll be like, hey, watch your fucking mouth.
That's Fist Fight Phil coming out right there.
That's Phil Jones comes out. He's like, oh, you got something to say there? Listen here, son of a bitch. You piece of shit. You fucking goddamn fucker. You fucking cross the line.
Yeah. And, you know, Chicano dads do love horror movies. So it's
Dude, yeah, I think that's thing. Another thing, too. Yeah, I think that's another thing, too, for sure.
My parents are the exact same fucking way. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, me and Webster both saw this at the same time. But
yeah, I was going to say, do we want to tell the story, like, congruently?
Go for it. You kick it off, Webster.
So, to start off this story, we had a whole day in L.A. Like, we went to the Formosa Cafe. I think we also went to Davy Wayne's earlier in the day.
Dude, we were lit.
We were crossfaded. That's the thing. We were pretty crossfaded when we got to the theater.
Tell them what happened that morning, though.
What happened that morning?
An earthquake that was a 6.4 happened that morning.
Oh, yeah. So there was an earthquake that morning. And we were going about our days, doing whatever. We get pretty crossfaded. We're walking into the AMC in Hollywood.
No, it was the Arclight.
Was it the Arclight? I thought it was the AMC. Remember.
No, because it was underground.
Every time you guys keep telling this story, it's the Arclight.
Okay. Yeah. It's the Arclight then. the Arclight in Hollywood. And our theater, we have to go down a bunch of stairs, and like I am very acutely aware that we are underground. And I'm like in my seat, like kind of swaying in my seat because I'm a little fucked up. And like we're getting, like, it's the beginning of the movie, and as we all know, the first 15 minutes of this movie is incredibly intense.
Yes.
It's hard to watch. Mm-hmm. And right as, like the music is so loud, like, the score, like, the way they, like, they turned the bass all the way up. Mm. And at one point, like, I can feel, like, my feet kind of vibrating during, like, the scene where they're, like, uncovering Danny's parents and sister. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is, like, really loud. And, like, my feet keep shaking. And then I'm like, this is really, really loud. And like, and then I realized the room is shaking. And I realized that, and then people kind of like, are we having an earthquake? And then the room starts moving. Like kind of.
Like a lot.
Like a lot. And we realized that we are in fact having an earthquake. In the middle, in the most intense part of this movie.
Credits are popping up.
Credits are popping up. It's very intense. And then, would you like to continue the story?
They evacuate us right away. So theater people come out. And like, listen, you guys need to get out. Just go ahead and stand over there. And just mobs of people rush out. Because this was the Ridgecrest earthquake in 2019. It was a 7.1. Oh. So, one of the biggest earthquakes we've had in a long time, and we were underground, so we felt it much more than a lot of other people. So yeah, they gave us free tickets, and they're like, hey, listen, you guys, if you want to come in, blah, blah, blah. And then Ruben was so scared. He was like, I'm not going underground again and being enclosed if earthquakes keep happening today. That was the second one. And there was a third one later on. Yeah, so we settled. I was seeing someone at the time, and she was from Florida. And she was like, I never want to experience a fucking earthquake again. That was funny. Oh, man. And then what ended up happening is me and Webster we're like, okay, cool, we'll just watch an OC. And then we watched we finally saw the full movie in Orange County in the Buena Park Theater right next to your place.
Yeah.
And man, it was a great experience, but there were these teenagers making the fuck out right behind us.
Or next to us, I think.
It was next to us, right?
Yeah.
They could not keep their hands off each other the whole time, and I think I remember one, like, when he came to, was like, what's going on in this fucking movie?
When he came up for air. Yeah.
He, like, didn't know what the fuck was happening. It was great.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah. We were just chilling. We had our drinks. We had, like, the feet up on our fucking chairs.
Oh, yeah. It was luxurious.
I hear the sounds of teenagers making out, and I'm like, how the fuck? And I look over and I'm just like, great, awesome, love this.
Be here for 3 fucking hours. I know. Mm-hmm. They were there the whole time, but I think they were exhausted and confused at the end. So, you know.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Like, can you imagine not paying attention throughout the entirety of this movie, and then you finally start paying attention towards I don't know, the bear scene
yeah, it's like, why is this too bloody?
Yeah.
What could he have possibly done to deserve this? It's like, yeah, when I went to go see Skinamarink, and the guy in front of me slept the entire time, and then he woke up at the very end, turned around and said, well, that, like, he was like, what happened?
God, I fucking hate people sometimes. Anyways, yeah. But, you know, we were both pretty hyped by the end of this movie. I think we still had a couple drinks with us anyways, but yeah.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, just my thoughts. And Webster, it's your birthday. I'll get you the last one.
Sure.
This is a phenomenal, it's a modern classic. It's a modern classic fucking movie. For as long as it is, it does not feel that long. I can always watch it.
Yeah.
Amazing performances. Cinematography is something else. No wasted frames. Every character hits their fucking marks. This is just one of those movies that, I can't believe it even got made, because there's nothing like it. So that's my really brief praise. Like, honestly, I would have went back in the fucking earthquake fucking ridden arc light and watched it again. Like, hands down. But, you know, it's fine. We were safe. It was all good. And then we watched it again. I've watched it so many times since, honestly. And for a almost 3-hour movie, for me to watch it that many times, yeah. Mm-hmm. You got me. So, Webster, what she's got?
Oh, man. I mean, we've been wanting to cover this forever, and I'm so glad there finally was, a good, it felt right to finally cover Midsommar.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. We've been sitting on it for a couple years, and it just... I fucking love this movie. I think I'm in a very similar boat with Vanna, where it's like, I there's a lot of instances, or there's a lot of almost spooky similarities I have to this movie, character similarities and life circumstances that this movie is very difficult for me to watch, but I fucking love it. Mm-hmm. And even just watching it again, I watched it twice in preparation for this podcast. I watched it at my desk today.
Wow.
Love that.
You know what? Real quick, I actually wanted to watch it again after I was done with it. What's up for... I was going to track down the director's cut and be like, yeah, I can squeeze it in.
But what's crazy is that I had a visceral emotional reaction to certain parts of the movie. I started tearing up at certain points, and I was like, why the fuck? I know what's happening. And not the parts you might think, but I fucking love this movie. Just exactly what you guys have said. Aesthetically, it's beautiful. The story is incredible. I was talking to a friend of the podcast, Caitlin, about this, where it's just everyone gives this movie shit for being a good for her movie. And it's just it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
And it's also there's just so much to say about this movie, like, just from, like, a, like, read between the lines, people. Please, I'm begging.
Just like, I can literally make, like, a 10, 20-minute video essay on, like, why this fucking movie rules, man. But, like,
yeah.
Yeah, this movie is incredible.
And, yeah, I think there's... I think calling it a good, like... keeping it as a good-for-her movie is a cheap and lazy interpretation.
Also, a gross misunderstanding of what good-for-her
means.
The whole point of that meme, like, from Arrested Development, like, Lucille's very obvious, like, it's... the woman who drove her car off a cliff with her children in it, very obviously not a good-for-her moment. Like, that's the whole joke.
That's the joke, yeah.
So, it is a good-for-her movie because that's the joke, that it's not...
that it's not good-for-her. Like, not a, like, good-for-her instance, yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
People...
that's actually what someone wrote a whole thesis about in my, the cohort before me. One of the girls wrote her thesis on... like, the good-for-her subgenre and, like, neoliberal feminism and stuff like that.
That's
and
awesome.
That's cool.
It was a very cool thesis, but I also was, like, a little part of me was still like, but that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's also, like, I mean, a lot of people say the same thing about Jennifer Check, which I know you feel passionate about as well, because you also have Jennifer tattooed on your body as well.
Yeah. This whole episode is just a tour of my...
it's a tattoo my tour.
Sleeve.
So here are my beliefs.
But, yeah, no, I have a lot of passionate feelings about this movie. Just also, like, there's a lot that I could talk about, but, yeah, I don't even, like, I think we all could, in our own way, just make, like, a PowerPoint of, like, why this movie is incredible, and it would all look different.
That's true. Yeah. That's, yeah.
Someone actually asked me on my TikTok, to elaborate on, like, the parallels between my life and both Hereditary and Midsommar, because there's something going on between me and Ari Aster, I guess, because it's weird. So, yeah, so I have, like, a whole video, because people were, like, asking about it, because I made a TikTok defending Midsommar, obviously, so, and then people wanted me to elaborate, so, yeah.
It would have been even better if you did the David Lynch meme where it's like, please elaborate on that. No.
No. Oh, yeah.
This movie is just like my life. Please elaborate on that. No.
No.
Oh, that's great. Domestic audiences were very divided on Midsommar, much like they were with actually Hereditary, too. Still, critics obviously love both of these films. What do you think the main reason is for not only just this divide between general audiences and critics, but general audiences within each other as well? What makes this particular movie, and Hereditary to some extent, so divisive?
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah, whoever wants to go, whoever wants it.
You know what? I think it's very easy to just go ahead and just say, people are dumb, you know? Mm-hmm. I think we literally just... didn't we just say that earlier in this episode already?
How I mean, people are dumb, people? But you know...
I said people as a whole are panicky.
Oh, okay, okay. I knew we were saying something.
I was generalizing the human race, yes.
Yeah. Well, the human race, you know, to a certain extent, there's a lot of truth of how dumb they really are.
I be dumb sometimes. It's okay. I get it.
He's like, I make typos all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So Ari Aster this is a sophomore film. A lot of people did not know who the fuck he is. And 2019 audiences were getting spoiled with just really... easy to follow storylines just handed on a silver platter, you know? Thought-provoking films were just not as, dare I say, mainstream as they kind of are now. I don't know about mainstream, but they weren't as big as now. Like, A24 was already pretty on... they already made a name for themselves back in 2019, but, like, you know, these movies, they didn't become, like, their own little mini genre at the time, you know? Like, how they are now. So I just don't think people... I think people were just like, I don't get this movie, that therefore I don't like it. You know, and they just dismiss it really quickly. And I think that's what... I'm trying to think like a general audience here. But that's what's going on.
I mean, yeah, I can definitely see that. I also think it might have scared the shit out of some people. I think there's probably a big crowd of dudes that kind of... empathize with the, you know, the Jack Rayner character a little bit, and this may be like a, fuck me, like that kind of like reaction. Mm-hmm. I think that was probably a really big part of it.
It's a mirror they didn't like.
It's a mirror they didn't like. It's like, hey, I can't just guilt people into blah, blah, blah. Like, that's not funny. Why would he act like that? Like, yeah. I think there's that. There's definitely the fact that it is a movie set outside of the U.S. that plays up a lot of, like, American anxieties for people who don't travel, me included. I don't travel that much. So I think that other kind of thing, or like just the outside stuff, really scares the shit out of people too. I personally think like it has so much going for it that general audiences either overwhelmed, confused, and ultimately this provokes a level of fear in them that it's hard for a lot of people to handle. It really is. And this is a film nerd movie. Mm-hmm. And there's more film nerds now than there probably ever has been before, but that's still not the majority. It's still not most people, but it is most critics, which is probably why critics really fucking love this movie, I would imagine. So that's my take on there.
Yeah, I think the like good for her thing we mentioned also plays a big part in that. Like, it got a lot of good for her movie praise, and then. Mm-hmm. People want, on the topic of like media literacy, people want things to be very clear cut, I think. Yeah. They think they don't, but they do. So when people were finding catharsis in it and or calling it ironically good for her, other people clap back, like with the, well, that's not what it's actually about. It's not about feminism. It's about her being indoctrinated into a cult. But they are both true. So I think like those two camps end up just fighting with each other, even though I think it's very clear that his intention was that interplay of like how cults prey on people who are vulnerable. So yeah, like most of the, this is like on TikTok, most of the like straight up battles I see are that, like, people saying like this is feminist and like, or this is good for her, or like identifying with Danny, and then other people being like, no, this is her being indoctrinated into a racist cult, and like not realizing that they were both right. So they end up being divided.
It's the failure to realize that two things can be true at the same time.
Yeah
like I mentioned, like I identify with it very heavily, like like weirdly, like 2019 or 2018, like right after we graduated from UCR, I spent my summer in another country after like being in a really bad relationship, after a sibling unalived themselves, and like my boyfriend didn't tell me he was going to another country, and I randomly found out. And like literally the plot of Midsommar happened to me. It was very weird. So I find catharsis in it. However, I'm like, yeah, I know she's being indoctrinated into a cult. Like, you can see both. You can use critical thinking skills.
I promise.
You can recognize nuance, people. Like, I don't know. Like, that's the thing. Or, like, because it's morality, like, because it's a racist cult is, like, the reading. Then because there's a moral standing assigned to it, then people get touchy. You know,
then it becomes like, because the person that you're associating with or you're feeling a familiarity with is falling victim to this racist cult, then you start feeling guilty for feeling like an association with this character. Like if you're a white person,
as a white woman. Yeah. Like, so then I get told that my catharsis, because of my weird parallels, is like, oh, well, you only like it because you're a white woman and you wouldn't be the one who would be killed in the movie. And I'm like, yeah, but like I can recognize that in the film. Like, I don't know. There's a weird like moral thing going on the last couple years with like morality in film and what we depict on film. So I think that plays into it a little bit too.
There's that funny thing about, and this is a completely quick little side note about like whether or not like Danny is not the protagonist of the movie necessarily. Like, she's not the protag. There's that thing where like Apple won't let
Villains can't use iPhone.
Yeah, she doesn't have an iPhone. Interesting. Just something to chew on there.
So all of her bros are doing, like, you know, her boyfriend, her bros are have the fucking blue bubble.
And then, she comes
dude,
in.
You're fucking going out with the fucking green bubble, man.
Yeah, she comes in and ruins the group chat with it, makes it all green. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah, like, same. I think people think, like, oh, because we follow her, or there's a lot about her trauma that she... that there's the assumption that she's the protagonist and therefore we have to identify with her, but it's more of an ensemble film where, like, it's not, it's equally about Christian as it is about Danny and, or about the Harga, like, about the community. Like, it's more than I think people really give it credit for. And even people who recognize all these things for some reason cannot cope with all of the things that it is about. And then, because they don't understand or cannot, do not want to put all of the pieces together in the same analysis.
Yeah.
Then say, like, oh, well, it's just, like, too... There's also, like, a weird retro hipster thing with, like, not liking high-brow films.
So. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah. Elevated horror. It's elevated horror. Oh, my God. Well, all it takes is two words sometimes to just destroy the movement right there. That's it.
Elevated horror. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There it is.
Another whole TikTok that I have ranting about that.
But just, I mean, echoing everything that Vanna just said, very similar experience. For me, relating to Midsommar also is like a weird experience just because I also was coming out of a very shitty, like, gaslighty abusive relationship right at the, like, right as this movie came out, and I was, and like seeing it, and I was just like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, like, and like having that, like, emotional catharsis from watching the movie doesn't mean I'm like a-okay with, like, the content.
Like, right.
And I think that nuance and, like, conversation is, especially on the internet, people have a very hard time having that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people get caught in, like, kind of binary thought. Like, oh, it has to be either one way or the other. It has to be good or bad. It has to be this or that. And then when you play with it to the point of discomfort, they get really fucking defensive. It's just how it works. I don't know. I always think of, like, that George Carlin quote, you know? Think of how dumb the average person is and half the people are.
Yeah.
They're not going to give it the time of day, especially when the movie demands that they give it the time of day sometime. Like, yeah. You know? It's tough for a lot of people, yeah.
But to come back to the original question, which everything you just said, I loved, Vanna. That was so cool. Why I think also, like, the general audiences, general domestic audiences, I think this movie has an artistic edge to it that also made people uncomfortable. Like, it kind of went to, like, a taboo place in a lot of instances that I think also made people uncomfortable, and I don't think they enjoyed that. Like, even, like, Hereditary, it was terrifying and it was, like, shocking, but it wasn't necessarily, like, a taboo necessarily. Well, this kind of played with taboos a little bit more when it came to, like, sex and stuff.
It's the Ari Asterness.
Yeah.
It's the Ari Aster element, for sure. I mean, it's the uncomfortable imagery that's presented in the film. That pulls in a lot of folks. That could also push out a lot, too.
Definitely. So,
yeah. No, 100%. All right. Wow. Well, look at us being all insightful right there. All right. I got one more good one. So... a major through line of the film is the, of course, as we touched on a little bit earlier, the fear of the other. And scholars note themes often of femininity versus masculinity, academic knowledge versus folk knowledge, and, of course, the traditional, you know, capitalism versus communism. We've all seen this movie a couple times, I'm sure, but which of these themes that are very pronounced in, like, scholarly circles here were most prevalent to you in your latest viewing of the film?
Oof.
Out of my recent one, my most recent viewing, which I think was like 2 days ago in preparation for this episode, I got control most out of it. Like, I felt it before, but I see the other themes here, but control and just letting go of control and just letting go. Like how one of the folk people tells Christian, like, oh, it really just gets rid of your defenses. like the tea, this tea, drink this tea, and like, you know, your defenses are gonna fuck off or something like that, right?
Yeah, and then just kind of accepting it, like, oh, you'll be
yeah. Okay. I mm-hmm. seriously felt like there's the thought of control of like, in Danny's situation when the family tragedy happens, all the way to just letting go the smirk, that smile after seeing Christian burn, like. It just, I just kept coming back to control, and yes. not like you know, the pull in, not like the Matrix kind of control. I'm thinking more like, just kind of, just between partners, between yourself, and just kind of. Yeah, I mean, this was kind of like a descent into madness, and I believe control, the idea of control, had a big, big. Role in that.
Yeah, all right.
I like that because mm-hmm. one of the things that I picked up on this watch was Danny, like, when everyone is, like, screaming, when everyone else is, when, like, the sacrifices are being burned alive at the end of the movie, mm-hmm. and, like, everyone else is, like, you know, screaming along with them, and, like, Danny's also freaking out, and she's looking around, and she's realizing, she's like, everyone's acting the same way I am.
Yeah.
And like this like control thing, like she's like, I can like let go, and like I'm not gonna be told to like
yeah.
not like I have been for the last however long.
In the beginning of the mm-hmm. film, she had zero control of anything that was going on.
Yeah.
At the end of the film, she had total.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that scene specifically mirrors the scene when she goes into the bathroom in the airplane, and she's literally like that. Holding her throat because she can't cry and she can't scream. So like that specific scene where they're just like yelling is like directly contrasting that like literal little box she was in, because she had to be a certain way around everyone, because that's because people don't like being around people who are grieving. So
yeah. I gotta deal with this. Ah.
You bring up that scene of the airplane, one of the most beautiful, memorable transitions of all time.
So fucking good.
Mm. So good. It gets me every time. I'm like, ooh, yeah.
So good.
I love
look forward to it every time. I'm like, here it comes, here it comes.
Yep.
But yeah, I guess on that kind of note, with like the fear of the other, I guess this kind of relates to the control in a way, like the control of their surroundings, because it's definitely about ethnocentrism, and like
that's where I was going too, so perfect. Please
I think that is also part of maybe the divide, because we talked about like maybe some dudes didn't like the mirror being held up to them and the way they act towards their significant others, but also like if the issue or the catalyst for and like punishment, you could say, is disrespectful behavior and things that are very much related to ethnocentrism, or like having to watch like old people engage in a suicide pact because that's their culture. Mm-hmm. It makes you as an audience member like have to confront your own uncomfortability with other cultures and your own, like you're sitting there going like, oh, I'm next. And people don't like that when, like, kind of like I touched on, like that morality has to be very clear cut. You want to know where you stand when you're watching a film, or the typical viewer like wants to know whether they are good or bad in relation to the laws of the film. Yeah. So the fact that they're being confronted with like behavior that they most likely would engage in is probably hard for people to deal with. I don't know, I guess if that makes sense, because I think there's a lot of other films when you get into like the depiction versus endorsement, like
depiction versus debate, that's a good way of putting it.
There's a lot of films that like people boo on because they're watching something they don't want to watch, and I think it's often because it makes them have to confront their actual feelings about certain things. Like, you know, how would you feel if you went and watched old people die? Or yeah. like, how would you feel if their oracle was, you know, someone who is a product of inbreeding? Like, there's a lot going on that obviously you want to take a moral standing on, but because of the boundaries of the film, you're like constantly having to renegotiate those boundaries. Like, you're like, oh, yeah, wait, do I think they're rude or not? I don't know. So I think that, like, fear of the other, but also probably why viewers can't place where they sit with the film.
Yeah, no, it's like a, sometimes I think it's confronting, like, it, making them confront behavior that is innate, like, it's not something they actually think about, so when they have the opportunity to actually give it more context, they're like, whoa, hold on a second, that's not how I do it, is it? And then it kind of provokes a general discomfort from theirs, but, so, I mean, yeah, I mean, to me, also, a big thing that stuck out with me, I like that the study point about the ethnocentrism, because it kind of brought in, like, the academic stuff in here was something that I didn't really give much cadence to before. But definitely does the Americans have that almost know-it-all, like, it's still, like, it's almost like this thing is a zoo to them throughout a really good portion of the film. And obviously that's a general lack of respect. You know, he pisses on the old tree. Like, they really don't respect these people's traditions. They don't, even their language. Like, to them, it's just almost burdensome to have to deal with a lot of these things. And that really, really stuck out to me because, you know, as, again, as somebody who doesn't travel and stuff, it is a fear, obviously, that a lot of Americans have. But, you know, these people obviously have been doing this for centuries. They have their own folk innate knowledge here. And, you know, they get the one up at the end of the day. But the movie does show a lot of how unearned that level of arrogance is, despite the credentials that kind of come along with it, because, you know, when you're out of your element, it doesn't mean shit. It generally means nothing. So yeah, I mean, that within that particular list, that's my take on it, but, you know, what do you think, Webster?
I think all of those are really good answers. For me, it's very kind of similar. This viewing, I definitely got, like, modernity versus tradition. Just because, like, very similar to, like, the, like, oh, we're just, like, the Americans who are going to come in and, like, kind of, yeah, piss on your old tree and take photos of your sacred text without permission and, like, basically feel like they're they're a sense of entitlement that came with, like, the modern, versus the tradition, like, that was also kind of came up with the suicide pact, where, like, it's just, like, everyone's freaking out, and I think that also, something that I read Barbie meme, you guys ever think about death? I, like, how traditions, or how cultures treat death is, like, very obviously personal and very scary for someone outside of that tradition, and I think this movie did a really, really good job of, like, showing that difference, like, and I think that's, like, the key word, right? Like, the difference between, like, focusing on difference, mm-hmm. or other, yeah. And so for me, that was a big, like, takeaway for me on this viewing, just, like, specifically the death ritual. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about death a lot.
It was actually harder to watch this time, too. I don't know why. I was like,
maybe that was it. This is the first time that, like, I didn't look away when they jumped.
Oh, okay. This is one of the first times I did look away.
Because in the movie, when we saw it in theaters, I definitely, like, looked away or closed my eyes. Like, I couldn't watch it. And, like, every time after that, I'm like, is this going to be the time? And I always chicken out at the last second. I'm like, I cannot watch. Like, I cannot watch this. And this time, like, literally today at my computer at work, I was just like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to watch.
Brave.
And I'm like, oh, that was better idea.
I was like, I'm going to be brave with the screen when it is 12 inches away from my face.
I actually love seeing that. I love seeing the dummy's, like, face getting pulverized from bouncing off the boulder. I was like, oh, look at that. That looks pretty cool and bloody, so disgusting. Organic. Like, like it looked pretty cool. And then when like the old man's face was getting smashed by the big large hammer, there's like a close up on that. It's obviously a dummy, but like I was like, "Ooh, that looks good. Look at that. They even have hairs on the dummy. The eyebrow. It even has eyebrows and everything."
Like, Aster loves his head trauma. That's for sure.
Yes, he does. Yeah,
he does.
I can't. I am y'all so really mad.
For a close up.
I'm so pissed at myself for not seeing Beau's Afraid, man. Because I don't know what I'm missing.
Same. Yeah. I kind of want to see what it's about, but also I'm a little cautious.
I wanted to make a bigger effort.
I'm more cautious because my film nerd friends who love these two movies are the ones that are also very divided on it. So I'm like, oh,
same.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Same. Yeah.
It's you know what I'm going to say.
I think I'm going to love it. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm going to go in with my own take, you know. Apparently it's not horror, but hey, that's cool, man. The dude's got freedom to do what he wants. But Scorsese praised the hell out of it, and I'm just like, fuck, man. Like, why did I not see this movie? Man? I'm just so mad. I should have made a bigger effort.
It was in theaters for like 5 days. Like, it was.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping it doesn't mirror another traumatic event in my life, like the last two.
Like, oh man.
Text TikTok in 2 weeks. Like, oh yeah. Oh wow. A lot of them this time. Okay.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Then you're gonna have to personally find Ari Aster and be like, "Hey, dude, what the fuck?"
Yeah. Like, honestly, yeah. It's
weird. Is my lifestyle a joke to you, man?
Is my life trauma just like a joke? Is it your creative fodder? What the fuck? At least run me a check first. Jesus Christ.
Honestly, yeah. Boy needs some therapy.
All right. Fun question time. You are now the leader of your own religious/spiritual movement, complete with its own set of traditions. After years, you develop a very big following, and your very own Midsummer Celebration, actually. Where is your particular, let's say it's cult, where's your cult based? What are three rituals/traditions that are fundamental to this particular celebration, and how does one become the fill-in-the-blank king or blank queen?
Ooh,
damn!
Yeah.
That's a hefty question.
It is.
Just location, damn. Three traditions, who top dog?
could this location be fictional?
Sure.
Okay. Damn it! I need a second to. Damn, usually shit like this just pops up the top of my head, but
this requires a lot of brain cells.
Yeah,
a lot of brain cells for 7 o'clock on a Friday.
All right. I think I got something here. If you guys need time,
go for it.
All right, you mentioned fictional. In order to be the, how does one become the king of the Blood Rave from Blade? It's an every Friday night, me and my fellow vampire brethren and sistren, we get together and we rave, we party, we have to like constantly refill the blood sprinklers, so because it's a lot, we're talking gallons of, and you know, we take some pills and we dance the same techno song for 4, 5, 6 hours, and what's the next thing after your own Midsummer Celebration, dude? The fucking thing is called Blood Midsummer Celebration, how about that? So where is it based? Let's keep it downtown LA, man. That's where all the freaks go. That's where all the freaks go. So three ritual traditions. Well, you got to bring in at least one human with you so we can like eat it. And other two traditions? Damn. This is a tough one, Flynn. You really got me thinking over here. Also, yeah, dude, bring a human and just drink as much blood as you want and bring some drugs.
There you go. That's a good three traditions right there. Okay.
Yeah.
And the Blood Rave King or Queen. That's the mm-hmm. title. Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Is that the guy that drinks the most blood or the?
Yeah. And there's always gonna be that one asshole who's gonna bring in the fucking daywalker, and you know he's gonna be like, hey guys, this is my friend Wesley, and I'm like, oh fuck, we have to run. Yeah. So all right. That's mine.
Who else got one? I think I have one if you guys want
to see. Yeah, go for it. You're asking for a lot of creative brain power right now.
Yeah.
Where is it based? Where is it based? Fucking Haddonfield, Illinois.
Oh, fuck. Oh, shoot.
Yeah, it's called the Cult of Thorn. Now.
No. Yes! Yes! Damn it!
Not
why
the way
think
you're
that?
Thinking.
Why
Not
didn't I the think way about you're that? Thinking. Because I'm this, so mad that I didn't think about this.
This is the anti-cult of Thor. So.
now wait a goddamn minute now. Hold on, dude. Now just wait a second.
The three traditions are, first of all, you gotta find one copy each of Halloween 4, Halloween 5, and Halloween 6. Then the second part of that tradition is you gotta find a creative way to destroy this particular copy. Defecation gets you a little more bonus points.
Obviously. Ew.
But the thing is, you don't watch it. You don't watch it right away. You don't watch it right away. Yeah, and then the third tradition is actually, it's like the screaming in this particular movie, Midsommar, except everyone is screaming Cookie Woman. They're just all screaming Cookie Woman.
Cookie Woman!
Cookie Woman! The whole time.
God damn it.
You love it, right? Yeah, and then you're the Thorn King or Queen, man. You get a handshake with Mr. Myers, you get a photo op, and that's it. Next year, you're all back. So.
Wait, you sure you don't get, like, well, if this is the producer's cut, you sure you don't get a the ancestral thrust?
Oh, Jesus. No. This is not... remember, we get rid of the versions of the movie. We don't want to acknowledge this shit at all. So, yeah. Except the Cookie Woman part. That's it. That's the good part.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow. All
right. Yeah.
I hate you, by the way.
That's my dog of the Thorn trilogy. Yeah, there you go. All right. Who next? Okay. Who got it? Webster, you got it?
Yes.
All right.
Somewhere on a remote island that is overrun by... stray cats. There is my cat cult.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Some traditions that on this cat cult include being nice to cats at all costs.
Be nice to cats.
Be nice to cats. You gotta okay. Be nice. It's very important to the tradition of being nice to cats.
Okay.
And then to... become the the feline queen. You have to be the one who catches the most stray cats on this cat island. But okay. it's trap and release, you know. It's all.
You're not neutering these cats. They're just.
It's trap and release.
Okay. Okay.
I dig it.
Can you call your people the feline fanatics?
Feline fanatics, absolutely.
Yeah.
I just love cats, man.
Well, they are dope. All right, Vanna, what you got?
Oh, man, this requires a lot of brain power. I don't know. Maybe I'd have to go with a...
You can just describe grad school, too. Like, there's probably a lot of correlation with some of this stuff.
How about, like, a Twin Peaks the Owl Cave.
Okay.
I was just going to recommend it. I was just going to recommend a Lynch verse. But Twin Peaks sounds
Lynch
good,
verse,
too.
Yeah, yeah. You're the rituals, you drink coffee and dance and...
give weather reports.
Eat, yeah. Eat Garmambosia, I don't know. to become how does one become
king or queen of Twin Peaks or a Lynchverse?
I have a Lynchverse, let's see.
They gotta become the eraser head.
Ooh, yeah.
They gotta walk in to the White Lodge with one cup of coffee and come out with like four other cups of coffee.
Yeah, whoever can drink the most coffee and smoke the most cigarettes in a day.
That's
and refuse to elaborate on thought-provoking films.
Well, because they smoke so much cigarettes, they have to have that little breathing apparatus, and every time they take it off, they gotta be like, "Don't look at me!"
Yeah, everyone has to talk backwards.
Oh, no. Sometimes my head spins backwards.
Beer of choice is Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Oh. Yep.
Oh, we're building a Lynchverse in this episode.
Huh? We are.
There's literally so shit. Many things we could have done for a cult. So there's a podcast that last week's guest, Carly, put me onto. It's called Sounds Like a Cult. And it just takes, like, episode, or takes things that sound like people are just, like, generally obsessed with and, like, are kind of culty about. So, like, the cult of Coachella, the cult of the Real Housewives, the cult of Wall Street, the cult of church camp, like,
okay,
like those kinds of things where it's just like every, or like the cult of self-help.
The cult of self-help.
Interesting. Yeah.
Sounds like a podcast I am going to go have to listen to.
Yeah, right, it's now. Called Sounds Like a Cult.
All right. Well,
we're basically, and like my whole thing, like where I'm just like, people who own Hydro Flasks are like all in like this unspoken cult because we all put stickers on them and are just like, this baby keeps water cold for hours.
It's always
my emotional support water
it.
Bottle.
Exactly.
We're like, oh, I can't take the stickers off and it already fell down a couple times. Fuck.
My Hydro Flask is beat up to shit, and I every like 6 months I replace the stickers, or like every like 6 months or so.
Oh no, mine are there for years long. Those babies fall off. All right, well that was we went straight to the Hydro Flask cult. That was great. So, I think we're finally done with the questions though. Now we just got one more major one. Please, everyone, rate Midsummer out of 5 suspicious pubic hairs.
Oof,
5.
Yeah. It's a 5 for me, also.
Yeah.
It's an easy 5 for me.
Full 5.
It's probably the easiest 5 I've ever done, to be honest.
I was going to say, this is, no question, 5, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no thoughts, 5.
Yeah. No thoughts, brain empty from that previous question, 5.
Yeah, exactly. What else more can we say? Like, honestly, this is one of the best horror movies of all time, to me. Just fantastic.
Yeah, dude. And this movie came out at a fucking stacked year, but it still managed to fucking leave the largest impression on me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so unique. Like, it's just such a cool, good story. Like, I don't know. It's a good movie. It is a great movie. And I think the world is better off with it.
That's right, that's right. So just give him a 4th movie. He can redeem himself. Come on. We got one more horror in him. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, we can't even say whether or not the 3rd one's good or not because we haven't seen it.
No, but I want to say studios give it to him because it just didn't make a lot of money. That's my angle there. So, yeah.
I know, but he has 2 really good ones, so
that's true.
They'll take mercy on him.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. That was Midsummer from 2019. That was some very fun discussion that we could have just kept on talking about, because I'm like, I could talk about theory on this for ages. So
yeah,
so
same here.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you so much, Vanna, for guesting. That was incredible. Hey.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad when you asked me to come on for Midsummer, I was like, yes, no questions.
I'm so glad, because you were the first person I thought of when I was just like, if I want to have a guest for Midsummer, you were the first person I thought of. Absolutely.
I'm honored.
So on that note, let's wrap it up for this week. Next week, we're going foreign or non-American horror. We're going Asian horror. We're talking about a film that is also near and dear to my heart. That is incredible. So much fun. It's going to make Anthony incredibly uncomfortable. So stay tuned.
I was about to say, I've been avoiding this one for decades. So
yeah. I'll tell you when we're off air, Van. It's a good one. It's a good.
If there's one thing that I love in this world, is seeing Anthony uncomfortable. So yeah, I can't wait.
So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop, and you can find Phil on Instagram and YouTube at Phil Acevedo.
All right.
Vanna, plug your stuff. self-promote away. You're on a couple of pretty cool podcasts.
I am, I guess, yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at TheHorrorHellion, Twitter, TikTok, Letterboxd. It's all going to be HorrorHellion. I do have a podcast with my wonderful friend, Reina Cervantes, called the Carnal Extremities Podcast. We're diving into a lot more subversive and extreme horror films, pairing it with music. You can follow us on Twitter at CarnalEXPod. And then I also have a podcast with my little sister called Tale of Two Sisters Podcast. And we're on a little hiatus right now, but you can find us on Instagram at Tale of Two Sisters Pod, I think. So, yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
Awesome. Thank you again so much for guesting on this episode. This was so, so, so much fun.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I would never shut up about this movie. No, so yeah, it was same. Meant to be.
Incredible movie, incredible conversation. And I would say stay away from Midsummer festivals unless you're really, really familiar with where you're going.
Yeah, and be careful with drugs.
Don't drink the punch.
No, don't be careful with drugs. Do lots of drugs.
But get a trip sitter.
That's how we're topping it. All right, bye. Let's go. See ya.